Hey there, it's David L. Gray. In the morning, after the news headlines, I'm going to make the case about how the SSPX is doing something, they're not really doing something new, right? It seems new because we're living through it, but it's just rinse and repeat. A rinse and repeat cycle of what we've seen countless times. It's the Matrix rebooted. To prove that, I'm going to show you some eerie parallels between the SSPX and the old Catholic Church schism. Then today's commentaries for the readings at Mass, I'm going to break open the gospel reading, and I'm going to give you three reasons why people believe. Well, while they'll believe anything before they believe God's revelation. This is David L. Gray. Good morning. Let's get to your news headlines and thanks for coming in here. I appreciate you. And these are your news headlines for February 6, 2026, Friday of the fourth week of Ordinary Time and a memorial of St. Paul Miki and Companions and Martyrs. That's why we're in red today. I'm going to start wearing red every time we have a Really, probably every Friday I wear red. But anytime we have a martyr on our calendar. These headlines are brought to you today by St. Dominic's Media, our sponsor. Visit saintdominicsmedia.com, your source for books on Catholic history, liturgy, and fiction, offering free online classes and retreats to help you grow in the liturgical life. Sign up for their free 4-day online retreats starting at 6:30 on Monday, February 16th. This treat will walk you through the four holy desires as taught by the liturgy of the Catholic Mass. Sign up at saintdominicsmedia.com. In today's first reading from Sirach, chapter 47, verses 2 through 11, Sirach praises King David, celebrating his courage, victories, musical worship, and deep love for God. Despite his sins, the Lord forgave him and established his royal line forever. David becomes the model king whose strength comes from God and whose worship shapes the life of Israel. In a responsorial psalm, Psalm 18, the psalm proclaims, "Blessed be God, my salvation." It celebrates God as the protector, rock, and savior, the one who grants victory and remains faithful to his anointed. In the gospel reading from Mark chapter 6, verses 14 through 29, this is the dramatic account of the martyrdom of John the Baptist. Herod, manipulated by Herodians and trapped by his own pride and oaths, orders John's beheading. John dies for proclaiming the truth about marriage and sin. His disciples bury him with reverence. In world news, breaking right now, Ukraine peace talks may move to the United States. Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky says that the next round of peace negotiations with Russia will likely take place in the U.S. following 2 days of meetings in the UAE. He emphasized that any settlement must deny Russia's rewards for aggression. UK Prime Minister apologizes over Epstein-linked appointment. Prime Minister Keir Starmer publicly apologized for appointing former Minister Peter Mandelson as ambassador to the US, admitting he knew of Mandelson's ties to Jeffrey Epstein. Starmer apologized directly to Epstein's victims. Global aid flotilla preparing new mission to Gaza. In a global summon, Maritime Flotilla announced it will set sail again for Gaza from Barcelona on March 29th with expanded international participation. India to pay T20 World Cup match in Colombia despite the boycott threats. So they're going to play in Colombia despite the boycott threats. India's cricket team will travel to Colombia for a scheduled World Cup match, even after Pakistan threatened to boycott the game. India's U19 team reaches the Cricket World Cup final. India defeated Afghanistan to secure a place in a U19 World Cup finale in Zimbabwe. Prime Minister Modi to visit Malaysia for major trade talks. India announced that Prime Minister Narendra Modi will travel to Kuala Lumpur to discuss trade, semiconductor cooperation, and ASEAN relations. Winter Olympics continue in Italy amid global attention. The 2026 Olympics in Milan and Cortina continue as athletes compete across snow and ice events. Europe faces travel and security disruptions. Euronews reports ongoing issues across Europe, including flight delays linked to space debris monitoring, environmental protests, and cancellation of Mount Fuji Cherry Blossom Festival due to tourist behavior. The saint of the day, we're in the memorial of St. Paul Miki and Companions, martyrs. St. Paul Miki and his companions were 26 martyrs crucified in Nagasaki, Japan in 1597. Paul Miki, a Jesuit seminarian, preached forgiveness and gospel from the cross as he was dying. Their witness stands as a power testimony to steadfast faith under persecution, the universality of the church, the triumph of charity over violence. Their martyrdom helped plant seeds of Christianity in Japan, which endured underground for centuries. This has been your daily news briefing, sponsored by SaintDominicsMedia.com. And this is David L. Gray in the morning. I'll be right back with your lead story about the SSPX. Really on a rinse and repeat cycle, the same one we saw with the old Catholic Church after Vatican II. This is David L. Gray in the morning. Hello, I am David L. Gray. I am a Catholic theologian, writing and speaking and teaching courses you can find at SaintDominicsMedia.com. My work centers on liturgical theology, which is also the focus of my doctoral studies at the Catholic University of America. Welcome to my morning show. It's here where I walk you through the day's top stories, offer an uplifting reflection on the readings at Mass, and introduce you to the saints of the day. We're here every weekday at 6:45 a.m. If this show enriches your day, I hope you come back, and I look forward to connecting with you. Let's get into today's show. Welcome back into the David L. Gray Show. I don't know if you ever noticed this, but every single time this happens, every single time that the traditionalists have to choose, whenever they have to make a choice, they will always choose the wrong thing, right? When a choice is between docility or defiance, they choose defiance. When a choice is between humility or pride, they choose pride every time. Whenever the choice is between obedience and rebellion, they'll go with rebellion. Maybe it's the culture. Maybe it's the American instinct of revolution. Maybe it's spiritual. Maybe it's demonic. Demonic temptation dressed up as defending tradition. Either way, it never produces saints. The Protestants went this route. They went with rebellion, revolution, complete rejection of docility, and they still don't have any saints. The Waldensians, same path, no saints. The old Catholic Church, which we will talk about, and we'll compare with the SSPX. After Vatican I, they chose revolution, disobedience, pride. Still, no saints. There's really no fruit in that effort. It's, you know, and some people would say, I think someone said in the comments the other day, because I said this in the comments, and a person said, well, David, that's unfair for you to say because the SSPX, they're new. How can they have saints when they're only like 30 or something years old? It's not because they're new. I don't think that has anything to do with it. People die in their church, yet no saints. They don't have any saints because separation from the church never leads to sanctity. And when you listen to the rhetoric coming from Father Pellegrini in this interview that I'm about to show you here, it's the same old pattern, the same self-appointed guardianship, the same suspicion of Rome, and the same belief that they are the ones who must save the church. So let me show you this interview. And I'm really going to I'll show you the link so you can read the whole thing yourself. It's somewhat interesting to read because you can see really the psychology of the mind and how the mind and how the devil will work on the mind to come up with reasons and justification to do evil, right? The psychology is crazy. And it's the same mental psychology we see with people who choose to rebel against God, whether it's anything, whether it's their complete rejection of the Imago Dei, choosing, oh, I don't want to be what God created me to be. I want to be something else. Right? You see it there. You see with every sin, the mind always wants to come up with a justification, and it can be rather articulate. It can be, right? This is how sin works. And because the fact of the matter, just from the theological perspective, we all were created by the same God. We're created by a good God. We're created for the good. So the heart always desires good. And therefore the heart can never do evil, truly. Because in our minds, we have to justify everything that we're doing as good. Because that's what we're oriented to. We're oriented towards God. But so there's the objective good and there's the subjective good. So the heart will choose either. It just depends upon how the heart is formed, right? So we always choose the good, okay? And so that's why we look upon these people with mercy. Like, oh, yes, they desire to choose the good. They just don't know the objective good, right? And so that's on us to evangelize and to lead and to pray for them. But let me share this interview with the superior of the SSPX, Superior General, Pellegrini. And I'm just going to point out just two questions for you. And I really applaud the interviewer for asking some tough questions, but I'm just going to point out a couple, and I'm going to show you the big problem that we're dealing with here with people who want to justify evil and call evil good. Okay. So let me bring it up here. All right. So this is the interview. It is over at FSSPXnews.com. You can find it right there on their site. It's the lead story. But I want to take you to question number four here. So let's take a look at four. Let me make sure this is big enough on the screen for you without overlapping. Yeah, I think that'll work. And bring it up. All right. So he says, but then if you have not yet received this approval to make bishops, that's what this, the follow-up question is here. Why did you nevertheless, Superior General of the SSPX, consider it necessary to proceed with episcopal consecration? So this is what the head of the SSPX says, why they think it's necessary to proceed with consecrating bishops without getting canonical approval from Rome. And he says, Father David says, this is an extreme means proportionate to the real and likewise extreme necessity. Indeed, the mere existence of a necessity for the good of souls does not mean that in order to respond to it, any initiative whatsoever is automatically justified. But in our case, after a long period of waiting, observation, and prayer, it seems that the objective state of grave necessity in which souls, the society, and the church finds themselves today calls for such a decision. With the legacy left to us by Pope Francis, right, so that he goes into the grievance, right? And like I said yesterday, the SSPX traditionalists, they always, anytime you ask them about something, they always want to go into the grievance. Oh, because of what happened with Lefebvre, or because what Francis did. It's always the grievance and not the truth, right? So, that's a fundamental problem. We should lean into truth, not grievance, right? And truth is a person. His name is Jesus Christ. What does Christ desire? So you see that David here, his first go-to is, okay, this is what we desire. And we'll get into that. So he goes into the grievance about Francis, the grievance about the Second Vatican Council, blah, blah, blah. And then he says, it's sad to acknowledge, but it's a fact that in ordinary parish, the faithful no longer find the means necessary to ensure their salvation. That is a wild statement, just on the surface. So he's saying in an ordinary parish, there is no salvation. So there is no salvation unless you come to our Gnostic church. Like, we have the secrets to salvation. You can find salvation here, which is a huge statement, saying that there you can't get saved outside of an SSPX church. Missing in particular of both the integral preaching of Catholic truth morality. Right? So he's saying that's essential for your salvation, preaching. SSPX preaching and worthy administration of the sacraments as a church has always done. So again, this is their interpretation of tradition. Right? So this deprivation is what constitutes the state of grave necessity in this critical content. Our bishops are growing older and the apostolate continues to expand. They are no longer sufficient to meet the needs that we have at hand. So that's the first one I want to lean into here and show you. I'll show you the second one, but let me give you a summary of what Pagliarini is claiming, this state of necessity that no longer exists. And canon law does not allow, this type of self-declaration in case of emergencies. Canon law is crystal clear. No one may consecrate a bishop without papal mandate. That's clear. If you do something other than that, then you're leaning into disobedience. So the only exception, according to canon law, is if one, the church is literally without bishops. So there's one bishop left on earth. He can consecrate another bishop without papal approval, right? Without canonical approval. Number two, the sacraments cannot be assessed. Meaning that literally what it means, the sacraments cannot be assessed. So we need more bishops. Now, for the traditionalists at SSPX, what they'll say is that, what I say, this does qualify because the sacraments in a Novus Ordo were not real sacraments. Number three, or the faith is in immediate danger of extinction. So aliens from space come, or the mer people come from water, and we discover that they're actually evil and they want to eat us. Right? Maybe there's some sort of nuclear thing that goes off. Right? So somehow the faith is somehow at the point of extinction. Well, Christ said the gates of hell won't prevail against the church. Right? So we need to make some bishops. Okay. And apparently the Pope is dead also. So, there's no one around, right? So, and really, if you go back to the 80s and 88, this is the same argument that Lefebvre tried to make back then. But today, the traditional Latin Mass is available worldwide. And just even here, everywhere I travel around the world, you guys know I travel a lot. I live in Europe. I can go 20 minutes away here, and there's a traditional Latin Mass down at a retreat center, right? And this is not a very traditional part of Germany, by the way. Whenever I travel there, I can go to a traditional Latin Mass. It's everywhere in the world. When I come back to the States, it's not hard. Yeah, you got to drive a little bit, but it's worldwide. Okay. So then the sacraments are available everywhere. David does not have the authority to say that the sacraments in the Novus Ordo are not valid sacraments. So the church is not in hiding. The Martians, the aliens, the mer people have not come. They have not come to eat us. There hasn't been a nuclear explosion to wipe everyone out. Right? So the faith is not being extinguished, and there's no persecution preventing access to bishops or priests. So there is no grave necessity that he's claiming here. It's not even close, right? So Pagliarini is not trying to resurrect a justification that's new. He's not trying to create a justification that's new. He's really trying to resurrect a justification that died ages ago. Right? He's claiming the authority to save the church, which is not his mission, not his office, and not his right. That this is what he must do, right? Like, he's God. Like, I don't trust Jesus with his church. I, David, have to do this. I mean, again, the pride, the height of pride, the height of hubris. This is crazy. And so, really, this is the most revealing line he says in this. He says, it seems to me that the objective state of grave necessity in which souls, a society, and the church find themselves today calls for such a decision. All right, let me bring that up again for you so you can just see this. It's wild. It seems to me that the objective state of grave necessity in which souls, society, and the church finds themselves today calls for such a decision. That's wild, right? This is the language of someone who believes, one, Rome has failed. Two, the bishops have failed. Three, the magisterium has failed. Basically, the gates of hell have prevailed against the church, and the SSPX must step in to save the church. They're going to put on their cape, put an S on their chest, and save the church. It's on them. Do you hear what he's saying? I mean, do you hear what this man is putting down? Am I the only one? Let me know, chat. Let me know. Am I the only one who hears what this man is cooking? Do you smell what David is cooking? A bunch of bullcrap. So this is not Catholic ecclesiology. This is self-appointed governorship, self-appointed guardianship. He's God. Right? That's the same mindset that produced the old Catholics. And we'll talk about that in a moment. So the church does not need the SSPX to rescue her. Christ alone is the savior of church. You know, when a group believes that they must save the church from the church, they have already stepped outside the church. This man is redefining necessity to mean that we don't like the direction of the church. Right? That's what he means. Patrick Wright's argument boils down to this. We don't like Vatican II. We don't like Pope Francis. We don't like the current pontificate. Therefore, you know, we have to consecrate. We got to do what we got to do. We got to consecrate without permission. I'm like, if this man was your child, well, I would say back when I was a kid, I don't know about you new parents, right? But back when I was a child, if I had this type of behavior, if I said, I don't like my mom and dad, I don't like their choices, I'm going to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich anyway, I would get my butt beat. I mean, butt beat. And I would probably have to go stay at my grandma for a week. I would have my TV taken away. When I was a kid, I had a little black and white TV. That would be taken away. I would probably... I know when my daughter did this, my youngest daughter, Olivia, did this, when she had this rebellious spirit, like she wanted to do what she wanted to do. I remember she had to be about, I don't know, 8, maybe. I went into her room and I deconstructed her bed, took it out of her room, mattress and everything, and a girl slept on the floor for a week, right? There's consequences. Saying that you're the parent, you're going to do what you want to do. There has to be consequences. That's why I'm at the place like, let these guys go. let them go. We're going to give them the old Catholic Church treatment because this is not necessity. This is dissent. All right? Canon law does not allow illicit consecrations just because you disagree with the Pope. We don't allow, canon law doesn't allow some sort of parallel hierarchy because you dislike the magisterium. We don't care about your temper tantrum. Canon law doesn't care about your temper tantrum or self-declared emergencies. But call in FEMA. It's raining outside. That's not why you call in FEMA. Is this not some sort of federal emergency because it's raining outside? It's rain. Put on an umbrella and suffer a little bit. What is this? If that were allowed, every group with a grievance could create its own bishop. I have grievances. I do. Should I go make a bishop? Should I? right? I'm sure you have some grievances about some of the things that's going on in the church. Is it a grave necessity? Huh? Is it, chat? Tell me. Tell me. Your grievances, do they give you the right to go make a bishop? Tell me. Is that what we're doing since we have grievances now? We're just going to make our own bishops? This is exactly how schism begins. His claim that ordinary parishes, they no longer provide salvation, is the most dangerous statement of them all. That line is like, it's really like a theological breaking point. All right, I'm going to be honest with you here. All right, in an ordinary parish, the faithful no longer have the means. In ordinary parishes, the faithful no longer have the means to ensure their salvation. What? What? You're telling me I'm wasting my time going to church? That I have to go to SSPX church for salvation? Oh, goodness. This is just wrong. I'm laughing because it's just incredulous. I mean, just the heights of pride and hubris that even have someone compose this and put it in a sentence. The man didn't put this in any sort of AI. If he put his statements, his answers to these questions in AI would have stuck his tongue out at him and laughed out loud. This is just simply crazy. These people are literally lunatics, mentally insane, is what I've come to the conclusion to. These are not sane, rational people. Read the interview and you tell me if you believe something different. This is just wrong. It's not some sort of ecclesiological catastrophe. Because if that were true, the church would have defected. Which SSBX says it's been a partial defection. Bruh. It's either a defection or not. SSBX is saying it's a partial defection. Oh, a partial defection is a defection. And it said that the sacrament, it would be like saying that the sacraments are somehow invalid or harmful. Tell me, are the sacraments harmful? You receive the sacraments, chat, right? You receive the sacraments. You go to confession in the Novus Ordo. Tell me, is it helping you draw nearer to God? I can tell you in my life, I know who I was 20, 30 years ago. I know who I am today. And that's because of the Catholic Church and her sacraments alone. It's also like saying, you know, there's no salvation inside the Novus Ordo Church Rome today, then it means that the magisterium is just completely corrupt as well. Yeah, we do have bad bishops. We do. I'm not going to lie about that. We've had bad popes, but the magisterium is an office established by Christ himself. Right? So it's an office with people in it. So we never say that the magisterium is corrupt as much as we acknowledge that there are some bad actors in it, right? So in the SSPX, right, they're acting like they're the, if all this is true, right, if there's no salvation inside the Catholic Church, then it means that the SSPX is the Ark of Salvation. They're the Ark of Salvation. Like they're about to pull up in Noah's Ark and save us all. Please come take us, David. Father David, come take us. We need your salvation. We need your help. The SSPX is about to pull up and save us all. My gosh. So this is exactly the claim made by the old Catholics after Vatican I. Exactly the claim that every schismatic group makes. Nothing new. Rinse and repeat. That's exactly the claim that the church has always condemned. The SSPX, my friends, they're not protecting tradition. They're replacing Rome with themselves. Look at the logic. Rome is wrong. Bishops are wrong. The magisterium is wrong. The parishes are insufficient. The sacraments outside SSPX are compromised. And the church is in grave necessity. And therefore, we must consecrate bishops. We must safeguard the tradition. We must ensure salvation. Right. This is not Catholicism. This is like a parallel ecclesiology. Again, it's the same pattern as the old Catholics, the Jansenists after Trent, the Donatists after the Fourth Council. Every group that has come along every few hundred years has said that Rome has lost the faith and we must put on our cape and preserve it. Everyone. Same script, different actors. All right. Let's take a look at number, let's pull up here to number six here. Let's pull up to six. So again, another really good question by the whoever asked these questions. And they're saying, you speak of service to the church, but in practice, society can give the impression of challenging the church, especially if Episcopal consecrations are envisaged. How do you explain this to the Pope? David answers, we serve the church first and foremost by saving souls. This is an objective fact and independent of other considerations. So he says, we serve the church first and foremost by serving saving souls. So again, they take the position that it's their souls to save, not God's, right? And fundamentally, the church exists for souls. Her purpose is to serve their sanctification and their salvation. All fine speeches, the various debates, and the various and major things upon which one discusses might discuss have no meaning if they have not as their finality the salvation of souls. It is essential to recall this because a church is in danger of busying herself with both everything and nothing. It's basically just an episode of Seinfeld. Ecological concerns, for example, preoccupation with rights of minorities and women and migrants, risk causing the essential mission of the church to be lost from view. Because a church cares about the environment that God said, you know, that we must caretake. Because a church cares about the poor, you know, that they just aren't completely screwed over. She's not safeguarding the souls. Oh my gosh. If the Society of St. Pius X strives to preserve tradition, with all that entails, it's solely because these treasures are vital for the salvation of souls, and because it aims at nothing else but the good of souls, and that of the priesthood ordered to sanctification. Again, in ordinary parish, the faithful are no longer necessary. They can no longer find salvation. In doing so, we place what we preserve at the service of the church. We offer the church not a museum of old dusty things, but tradition in its fullness and its fruitfulness. Tradition which sanctifies souls, transforming them and gives rise to vocations and authentic Catholic families. In other words, it is for the Pope himself, as such, that we preserve this tradition, this treasure, until the day when its value will once again be understood, and when the Pope will wish to make use of it for the good, for the church, for the whole church. For it is the church that tradition belongs. Okay. Okay. Again, tradition detached from magisterium is just an ideology. That's all it is. You can't detach tradition from magisterium. Right? This is getting really weird really fast. I mean, the SSPX argument is not about doctrine. It's about authority. Let's be honest about that. Pat Labrani is not defending tradition. He is claiming the right to define tradition. He's not defending the church. He is claiming the right to replace the church with his own judgment. He is not defending the sacraments. He is claiming the right to judge which sacraments are right, valid, and worthy. He is not defending the magisterium. He is claiming the right to veto it, to override it. This is why the SSPS cannot reconcile with the church, because reconciliation will require them, as my sister Brianna said on yesterday's video in the comments, that it admit that, one, that we are not the magisterium, right, which they claim to be. And that is the one thing they cannot say, right? Pellegrini, you know, the why he does not, I would say, why, you know, why does Pellegrini cite non-magisterial action as a deal breaker, right? In number nine, he wants to give a concrete example. You'll see here. He wants to give a concrete example. You know, a person asks him, hey, could you give a concrete example of something that the society cannot accept? All right. So he says, well, he wants to bring up the grievance of Pope Francis going to Abu Dhabi, and he signs this document with the Muslims and saying that God will the plurality of religions, right? So plurality of religion has been willed by such divine wisdom, right? And so he says, it is evident that communion founded upon the acceptance of such a statement, which would include it, would simply be not Catholic, since it would constitute against the first commandment and now the first article. So blah, 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 his interpretation of Abu Dhabi, which, yeah, a lot of people agree that that was bad. But again, he's citing a non-magisterial action of a dead pope as a deal breaker. That's the grievance. Right, because for the SSPX, the issue is not whether something is magisterial. The issue is whether the pope's public words or actions contradict their interpretation of tradition. Right? So regardless of whether you or any theologian can compartmentalize Pope Francis's bad action there, which a lot of people would say, okay, you shouldn't have done that. So whether we can compartmentalize that and say, okay, that was not magisterial, means nothing to David or the SSPX. For them, they're going to interpret that as a violation of tradition and saying it's a defect against the church. So once you understand that, everything else makes sense. The SSPX treats any papal act that appears to contradict their reading of tradition as proof that the church has defected. But in reality, again, this Abu Dhabi statement is not dogma. It's not doctrine. It's not a magisterial teaching or even an authoritative teaching. It's a diplomatic interreligious declaration that you and I can flush down the toilet if we want, right? But SSPX reads it as if it were some sort of solemn doctrinal definition, because they are looking for evidence that the post-conciliar church has abandoned from the faith. You know who the SSPX is? They're your girlfriend who goes through your phone looking for evidence to see if you cheated. You haven't, but she will find something to prove that you have. Whether it's that Instagram post that you liked with the girl with her glutes out, right? Whether it's what your girlfriend from high school texted you, said, hey, how you doing? And you said, I'm doing fine. She'll use that and say, oh, you're doing fine? SSPX is your girlfriend going through your phone, looking for evidence that you cheated, right? And she will find it, right? Pagan Riley, he elevates these non-magisterial gestures to the level of some sort of cradle crisis, right? That's not theology. That's ideology. That's your girlfriend going through your phone. The SBS guidance is not about levels of authority. It's about optics of contradiction. To them, the problem is not, did Pope Francis teach this infallibly? No. The problem is, did the Pope say something that sounds like it contradicts our interpretation of tradition? Right? If the answer is yes, in their framework, Well, the church has defected. That's why they treat Assisi in 1986 with JP II, Saint John Paul II, Abu Dhabi in 2019, papal interviews, papal gestures, papal meetings, papal prudential decisions. They treat it all as if it's some sort of dogmatic proclamations, as if you have to believe these things or you're not Catholic, right? So because the SAPX, their entire worldview depends on proving that the post-Vatican II church has abandoned the faith, Patrick Ryan's argument reveals, I think, the core problem. The SAPX collapses tradition into their own interpretation of it. That's the heart of the matter, I think. For the SAPX, tradition equals their reading of post-conciliar theology. So anything that deviates from their reading of it, even if it's non-magisterial, even if it's prudential, diplomatic, pastoral, simply a poorly phrased statement, is treated as a doctrinal betrayal. This is why they cannot accept Vatican II. This is why they cannot accept a canonical structure. This is why they cannot accept the living magisterium. Because accepting any of the things would require them admitting that our interpretation is not the measure of tradition. And that is the one thing they cannot do. But I think the more that I think about this whole SSPX issue, the more I think I'm convinced that we simply miss, we have to let them go. Right? It's time for us to just break up. This is bad. She's going through her phone. She's looking for evidence. We're not compatible. I mean, let's be honest. It's not working. It's not. She doesn't trust us. We don't trust her, definitely, with all her. You know, let's be honest. The SPX and child sex abuse and the whole financial malfeasance that they have going on, you know, marrying this chick would cause us more problems, right? You ever married somebody that had a whole bunch of debt and their debt became your debt? You know, how about you clean your life up first? And then maybe we can talk about reconciling. The timing just isn't great. And you keep going through my phone looking for evidence that I cheated. It's not working out, ma'am. Let's go our own ways. It's not me. It's you, right? I mean, that's what I'm starting to think about. We just have to, like, let them go. Like, bye-bye. Bye-bye-bye. We have to do, like, a whole NSYNC dance to these people. Like, bye-bye-bye. How did that dance go? It's not working out, right? At some point, you just can't keep chasing after a group that refuses every path that a church gives them. The only resolution, I think, is for them to accept one canonical structure, right? That the church actually allows, you know, a personal prelature, a religious institute, a society of apostolic life, a congregation. But again, as Brianna pointed out yesterday in the comments, they cannot accept any of those structures because they can't change their position on Vatican II. They cannot reverse the fact that they said the church is partially defected. They can't. They can't bring themselves to say that the council is valid. They can't bring themselves to say, oh, the church hasn't really lost their way. We were wrong about that. Right? Because to do so would be admitting that they were wrong. And they have far too much pride. And pride is a powerful prison. Right? And so the more I sit with this, the more I see the historic problem and the pattern. We've been here before. In fact, we've been here about 100 years ago. A group of Catholics, remember, they rise up to tell the church that she has misunderstood tradition and that they are the guardians of it. After the Council of Trent, like you see, you had a Jansenist insisting that Rome had corrupted the faith. After Vatican II, the old Catholics broke away, claiming that they, not the Pope, preserved the ancient and true apostolic tradition. Now, after Vatican II, SSPX is walking the same path, insisting that they, not the magisterium, are the authentic voice of tradition. My friends, it's the same script with different actors. That's all it is. And here's the irony. Tradition, again, detached from magisterium isn't tradition at all. It's an idea, and it becomes a self-selected set of preferences elevated to the level of dogma. And once that happens, no amount of dialogue, no amount of canonical structure, no papal outreach will ever be enough. Because the issue is not doctrine, it's reality. This issue between the Catholic Church and the SPX is a battle of who gets to define reality. SSPX wants to tell us that the reality is the church has defected, their sacraments are not valid, the faithful have no access to valid sacraments outside of us, and Jesus needs us to save his church. That's the reality that they're trying to preach. And it's just not a reality that the Catholic Church can accept. That's the real battle here. Not Vatican II, not liturgy, not canonical structures. It's a battle over who has the authority to define reality. The Church of Christ, the church that Christ himself founded, or a group convinced that they know better. And that brings me to a transition that we need to make here, because this isn't the first time. As I've been alluding to, we've seen this movie before. In fact, every century or so, a group of Catholics rises up with the same script. Rome has lost tradition, and we're the ones who can preserve it. Again, it happened with the Jansenists after Trent. It happened with the old Catholics after Vatican I, and now with SSPX after Vatican II. We're watching the same movie, the same pattern unfold again. So let me show you this parallel clearly. I'm about to bring this up on the screen and you'll see it. You understand what we're dealing with. This isn't something new or unique. We're dealing with a recurring temptation, demonic temptation in church history to take tradition away from the magisterium and into a private ideology. Right? So let's walk through the comparison here. Let me bring it up on the screen for you. All right. Let me make sure I make it big enough for you. All right. So here's a side-by-side comparison with the old Catholics versus the SSPX. A side-by-side comparison. All right. So here's their core issues with the council. So in this column, you see the old Catholic Church. And in this column, you see the SSPX. So their main doctrinal objection. Old Catholics is a rejection of Pastor Aeternus in 1870, which dealt with papal infallibility and a universal jurisdiction of the Pope. SSPX main rejection, according to them, the Document of Religious Liberty from Vatican II, documents, statements, teachings on ecumenism, ecclesiality, and liturgical reform. Their views of the council. The old Catholic Church said the Vatican I defined doctrines they believe were innovations. SSPX saying Vatican II seems ambiguous, dangerous, or doctrinally defective. Their underlying fear for old Catholics was a centralization of papal authority. For the SSPX, it's modernism entering doctrine and liturgy. So let's take a look at these. So that those are the similar type of ideas. They both say that the church is wrong to say the things that she said in her councils, and we disagree with them. So here's the actions that we're going to take. The old Catholics, they refused to accept Vatican I's definitions. They elected their own bishops without papal mandate. And the canonical consequence, obviously, was a formal schism was declared. Their public position claimed to preserve the ancient Catholicism, and they started calling themselves the Old Catholic Church. The SSPX, after Vatican II, shortly, Archbishop Lefebvre refused to accept certain Vatican teachings and reforms. In 88, he does some illicit, made some bishops without papal mandate. Consequence, excommunication. Later, it was lifted by Benedict, but the canonical irregularity remains. The public positioning, they claim to preserve tradition and the post-conciliar faith. Now, let's see how the Catholic Church responded to both groups. So we see, again, that both groups said the Ecumenical Council was wrong on these issues. Therefore, we're going to separate, make our own bishops, and we're going to tell everyone that we're the ones preserving tradition. Now, number three, the Catholic Church responds to the old Catholics by declaring bishops and clergy excommunicated. They said this is a formal schism. I like the Catholic Church back then because they didn't play around with this type of stuff. They consider the separatist ecclesial body not in communion with Rome. And there was minimal early rupture. All right, so they tried to dialogue. Not a whole lot of dialogue after the rupture. Right. I like that. Right. SSPX, their initial response, the church's response to them, they were excommunicated. Again, later lifted, but no canonical status was given to them. Church considers them irregular, but not schismatic. They lack canonical mission, status, mission, and ministry. Dialogue? Yes, there's been ongoing dialogues. Rome repeatedly offers canonical solutions. Sounds merciful, I guess. The size of the groups are interesting. The old Catholics, tens of thousands of German-speaking people in Europe. Current size, at their height, they were really large. Hundreds of thousands, massive infrastructure, seminaries, universities, everything. Today, they're about 60 to 70,000 and still shrinking. I think, like I told you guys Tuesday, I've been in an old Catholic church before by accident, and it was really weird. All the weird stuff you expect to see in like an Episcopal church in Gaytown, USA, was what it reminded me of in the old Catholic church. Trends decline due to doctrinal liberalization and loss of identity. Global influence, very minimal today. The SPX now, tens of thousands worldwide. Roughly 500,000, a little bit over, attached to SPX chapels and affiliates, depending on estimates, right? Growth in some regions due to liturgical or doctrinal stability. They grew a lot, obviously, during COVID. Significant influence in traditionalist Catholic circles. Structural similarity between them both. Both claim to defend the tradition. Both reject major ecumenical councils. Both perform illicit episcopal consecrations. Both created parallel ecclesial structures. Both lost or lack canonical mission. And both operate independent of Rome. There's some key differences, though. The old Catholics became weird really fast. And women's ordinations, same-sex blessings, rejection of many Catholic doctrines. Pretty fast, because that's what happens when you separate tradition from magisterium. You become weird really fast. You become very culty, very gay. Right? Doctrinal conservatism we see so far with the SSPX, right? But that's going to change once we really recognize that this is a schism. They have no relationship with us. So Rome views today, the old Catholics is fully separate. SSPX, we say regular, but not formally schism. Reconciliation is essentially closed. There's nowhere to go with the old Catholics. SPX still open, and Rome is actively pursuing. So I think that is really the best comp that we have to what's going on today with the old Catholic Church and the SSPX. Very eerie similarities. I think both groups were led into this temptation by Satan himself, because we know when it comes to disobedience, when it comes to rebellion against Christ and his church, when it comes to just pride and hubris, a lack of docility. We know that those are the fruits of the evil one, right? Whereas the virtues are obedience, patience, humility, docility. And so we know the virtues, they lead to sainthood, whereas the anti-virtues, they lead to hell. So we see SSPX, just like the old Catholics, exhibiting all of the anti-virtues. And so that's how we know that their path is not from God. They have no humility, no docility, no spirit, no evidence of having any fruits of the spirit whatsoever. The level of pride is just off the charts. So that's where we are with the SSPX. It's a demonic trajectory and under demonic influence, I would say. Same as the old Catholics. This is David L. Gray in the morning. I'll be right back with your... So I got three, and this relates to what we're talking about today. We're going to break open the Gospel of Mark for today's reading. And we're going to talk about the three reasons why people in a world will believe anything other than God's revelation. This is David O. Gray in the morning. I'll be right back.
Hey, you ever heard people say that you have to spend money to make money? Well, with my Capital One Quicksilver card, that's exactly what happens. Here's how I use it. I set my monthly budget aside, and then I put everything I'm going to spend on my Quicksilver. Bills, gas, groceries, subscriptions, entertainment, all of it. And if I spend about $3,000 a month, depending upon how much of that is travel, I earn between $45 and $80 in cash back rewards. That's real money for doing nothing extra. And here's the best part. I save all those rewards all year, and I use them for Christmas gifts. That way, I bless my family and friends without spending a single dollar of my own cash, just rewards. The Quicksilver card from Capital One is, I think, simply a smart way to make free money by doing what you already do. Get your card today, tap on the QR code on the screen or the link below in the description. And when the application opens, you'll see my name, David O. Gray, so you know you're in the right place to start earning with your new Quicksilver card. Apply today. Go make some money. What's in your wallet?
Hey, it's David O. Gray in the morning. Glad to have you back. Thanks for staying with me. These shows, these morning shows, we've been talking about the SSPX because it is an important issue. We don't want people to be led astray into error, into hell. So we do these. It is important to make these distinctions, especially in the Catholic space online, because it is dominated by traditionalists who are sympathetic to evil, clearly evil. Because again, every time we have to choose between pride and humility, the traditionalist movement in the United States chooses pride. Every time is the choice is obedience or disobedience. It's disobedience. It's just every time. Every time. It's an anti-spirit. So we have to do this in the Catholic space online because it is dominated by people who wants to tell us that pride, rebellion, revolution, dissent, schism are virtues. They're not. They never have been. Okay. But let's break open the gospel reading for today. So the first reading was from Sarah. We're finally out of Samuel, right? We were there for almost 3 weeks, so we're finally out of Samuel. That was a good run. The psalm today is from 18, Blessed Be God, My Salvation. And the gospel is from Mark 6, 14 through 29. So we're going to go ahead and break that open. And so the King Herod, and we'll just get into this first part here. We're not going to get into the second part dealing with the murder of John the Waymaker. So King Herod heard about Jesus, for his fame had become widespread. So Jesus is a rock star. He everyone knows about him by this time. And people were saying who Jesus was, right? So, and so when it says people, it just means that this is just these are the people, like a lot. It's commonplace. It's conventional wisdom, right? This is what is the word on the street, right? That Jesus is John the Baptist and has been raised from the dead. That's why mighty powers are working in him. So people were saying on the streets, oh, this is John the Baptist. He's been raised from the dead. Others are saying he's Elijah. Still others saying he is a prophet like any other prophets. Right? But Herod, when he hears this, he nails down, right, on the first one, on the former, that when Herod learned of it, he said, it is John who I beheaded? He has been raised up? So that's the one that Herod clings on to in today's reading. Mark is interesting, and I'm going to put it on top of, I want to put this Mark 6 a little together with Mark 8 a little bit here real quick. To point out something very interesting. So in Mark 6, like we just read, it demonstrates that everyone has an opinion. Everyone has an opinion. He's John the Baptist. He's Elijah. He's one of the other prophets. This is what the people are saying. Everyone has an opinion. The people is everyone. Everyone has an opinion. But notice that no one has revelation. None of what they said was, no one said, oh, God revealed this to me. It's just everyone has an opinion. Like today, everyone has an opinion. And people think their opinions matter, right? This is why Twitter became so popular. It's why X Now is so popular. People just put out their opinion as if it matters. Commentary shows on the news and everything like that. Opinion. What do you think? What do you think? What do you think? What do you think? That's the society that we live in. And we've gotten to the point where we've taught people that your opinion, it matters so much. Your opinion has so much value that it can become a dogma. Your opinion become what is true. And this is why they say in the world, what is your truth? Tell me your truth, right? They're saying, what is your opinion? Because your opinion has so much value and so much worth that is true, right? So everyone, this is a society that we live in. Everyone has this opinion, but no one has revelation. So by the time we reach Mark 6:14, this is just a word on the street, right? The word on the street about Jesus that is circling around. People are saying, hey, have you heard about this Jesus person, right? No, he's doing this, he's doing that. Man, that's really wild. I wonder how he's doing that. My opinion, I think he's John the Baptist. He's been raised from the dead. Man, you sure? I don't know. I think he's Elijah who has come back. That's how he's doing all these things. Nah, I don't know. I think he's one of the other prophets, right? That's the opinion on the street. These are speculations, not revelations. They are attempts to fit Jesus into categories that people already understand. That's where we're comfortable. And Herod does the same thing. He believes the rumor about Jesus coming back as John. Well, John coming back as Jesus. And so he's scared because he thinks that John has come back to haunt him, right? So he believes in ghosts. He's worried now. Oh, I beheaded this guy. He's going to be out to get me, right? So Herod believes the fear. The crowd believes the gossip, right? Everyone believes something, but no one believes the truth. Now, by the time we get to Mark 8, let me see if I can bring it up here for you. All right, by the time we get to Mark 8 right here, Mark's version about Peter's confession. Okay. So we see it really again, the same thing again, right? The disciples, as you see here, Jesus asked his disciples, like, hey, who do people, the masses, who do they say that I am? And then they, meaning the disciples, said in reply, some people say you're John the Baptist. Some say Elijah. Some say one of the prophets. And then he asks them, but who do you say that I am? Then Peter, again, he comes out of the crowd, because it's not they said in reply. It's Peter said in reply, you are the Messiah. And then he warned them not to tell anyone about this. And it's clear why, obviously, right? So there must be, it's a benefit in people coming to revelation on their own terms, right? And now was not the time to go around and tell everybody, for the disciples to go around and tell everyone, this is the Messiah. There still was some work to do, some ministry work to do before we get to that point. But even the demons, they know the revelation, right? They know that, oh, it's Jesus. You know, he's the Son of God. They know this. Even the demons know it. But Mark 8, the disciples, again, they just repeat the same speculation, everything like that. And this is really, I would say, you know, it's just the cultural chatter at the time. But did you notice Mark 8 and Mark 6? Did you see how they're connected? Right? The disciples are immersed in the same confusion as everyone else. Right? The disciples also haven't really disconnected so much from the culture at that point, because Peter, he has to say who Jesus is by revelation from the Holy Spirit, not speculation. So when Jesus presses the question, like, who do you say that I am? And Peter says, you are the Messiah. This is not a deduction. It's not a sequitur logical conclusion. Like, okay, if you're not John the Baptist, you're not Elijah, you're not one of the other prophets, who must you be? Now, it's not a logical deduction. It's not a rumor. This is not culture. It's not opinion. This is revelation. And it's revelation from the Father speaking to Peter's heart. So Herod believes the speculation. The crowds believe the speculation. Peter believes revelation. And that's really the hinge of the whole gospel. And I think you're probably right if you're starting to think that you're starting to see the pattern here with what's going on in the gospels here, but what's going on in the world, right? We see the same thing. People today will believe conspiracy theories. I mean, look at Candace Owens' YouTube videos ever since Charlie Kirk died. Her live streams have hundreds of thousands of people in them. And a lot of people don't realize what Candace is doing is entertainment. It's entertainment. And she understands that. It's branding. It's entertainment. This is what she does. But a lot of people cannot detach entertainment from truth and reality. Entertainment versus truth and reality becomes the same thing. And so this is why her videos throwing out all these conspiracy theories as entertainment has become so popular. Because again, going back to what I said earlier, we're created by good for good, right? So because we're created by good for good, and because God is what is true, we're always desiring to discover what is true, and we'll look for it in many different places, right? Even in conspiracy theories. Horoscopes are as popular today as they were in the 70s. You have the political narratives, right? People will believe those, you know, Russia, whatever it is at the moment, people will believe the political narratives. They'll believe internet rumors. They'll believe spiritual fads. Anything that flatters their worldview, anything that agrees with them, they'll believe. But when God speaks, through scripture, through the church, through liturgy. They hesitate. They question it. They're skeptical. They resist it. They dismiss it. Why? Why is scripture harder than all these other things? So I'm going to give you three reasons why people will distrust scripture and lean into all those other things that I mentioned. Conspiracy theories, horoscope, political narratives, internet rumors, spiritual fads, anything that flattens their worldview and agrees with them, they'll believe other than the gospel. And I think these are the deepest reasons. We could go on. I think this list could be a lot longer. All right. And it eventually will get to us. People don't believe the gospel because we don't live it. Obviously. Right. If we were just better Christians, people would believe the person that we follow. We say we follow. All right. So the first problem is us. We need to do better. But the other less obvious things I would say is that revelation, it demands conversion, right? Conspiracy theories don't demand conversion. Horoscopes don't command conversion. Political narratives, spiritual fads, all these other things, they don't demand conversion. You don't have to change yourself. You don't have to have a metanoia. Because you heard, oh, Candace Owens said the Freemasons killed Charlie Kirk. That's easy. It's easy to believe that. No problem whatsoever. It doesn't demand an accounting of yourself. It doesn't make you look in the mirror. It's not about you. Revelation is about you. So speculation, it just lets you stay the same. Revelation demands that you change. When you hear the truth, you have to do something with it. When you hear a speculation, it can just sit there. So Herod would rather believe that a ghost than believing that he had to repent. Right? The second reason I would say, the deeper reason why people would believe all these other things versus revelation, is to accept revelation is to admit. And this goes back to the SSPX. To accept revelation, it forces you to admit that I am not the measure of truth. I am not the measure of truth if revelation is true. Because it comes from God, not myself. And that is a hard one for the ego. If you've ever been there, as you know, outside of Christ, as a very egocentric person, you remember how important it was for you to define what is true, what is facts, what is true for me, and that how became your standard. You were your own magisterium. You were your own God, right? But if revelation is true, then I have to admit that there is something greater than me. That the universe doesn't revolve around me. That there's a complete other. That's hard. And that's what the SSPX is going through. And the third thing I would say, the reason why people believe everything except revelation is that revelation confronts our illusions. Revelation confronts our illusions. Speculation is safe. Revelation is disruptive. Revelation says God is real, Christ is king, sin is deadly, truth is objective, and you must follow. People will believe everything that does not require obedience. Obedience is hard. Again, go ask the SSPX. Obedience is hard. It is. It demands an accounting of yourself. It demands that you confront your illusions. It demands that you confront your reality. We can go our whole life and frame in our mind what we think is true. We can keep telling ourselves all these different stories about what is true. And if we tell ourselves the same story over and over again for so long, we will start to believe it. and to overcome that is hard. We can convince ourselves God isn't real. Christ isn't king. There's no such thing as sin. I don't sin. Truth is what you make it. I have my own truth. I don't have to follow anyone. You can convince yourself all those things. The mind can be a very sick place. You can convince yourself that you're a dog walking on two legs. But all of this is why the liturgy of the Mass matters. Like in the Mass, let me go ahead and plug my book real quick if you haven't gotten it. This is a liturgical sense of the reads of Mass. It's written by me, David Elgray. And you can find a book online anywhere that you get your books. You can hit this QR code and find it there. It breaks down all the readings in the Mass, just like I'm breaking them down. But that's for every Sunday and holy day of obligation. If you do have a book, do me a favor. Review it over at Amazon. I appreciate it. But this is why the liturgy of the Mass matters. In the Mass, we don't hear speculation. We don't hear rumors. We don't hear cultural noise. We hear revelation. We hear the word of God. We hear the gospel of Christ. We hear the teachings of the church. We see us ourselves as ascending the disciples. At the Missa S, we have a closing commission. This is the reality of our faith. That's what is true. That is what is real. And so in this way, the liturgy is an antidote to the world of speculation, because it is a place where God speaks, the church listens, and Jesus actually visits us and comes to dwell with us. We don't have to worry about speculation, rumors, horoscopes, conspiracy theories, because we have the truth living in us, and his name is Jesus Christ. All right, get to Mass this weekend, and I will, God willing, see you on the Monday after the Sunday. And thanks for tuning in. But until then, until next time, blessings and peace to you and to yours. This is David O'Gray in the morning.
Yeah, wait, I want to do this.
Wake up. It's time to start your day. No better way than rolling with David O'Gray. Wake up. It's praise and morning prayer, then news and reflections with David L. Gray. Wake up, yeah, rise and shine. Let the joy of the Lord hit your time. Sub and share. It's David L. Gray in the morning with joy in the air.